Hey, Avani Dias here. Welcome to the Hack Podcast. In suburbs all over Australia, there are small groups meeting up. They've got Nazi flags in their homes, which they salute. They've got weapons and train in fighting and combat. And they speak about how they can spread hateful far-right ideology. This is the picture of one of Australia's most serious security threats now, right-wing extremism. So we're going to talk about that later on this episode. Plus, environmentalists are celebrating today because drilling in the Great Australian Bight will not be going ahead. So you're going to hear about that soon as well. First, though, Harvey Weinstein's been found guilty.
This changes the landscape for sexual assault survivors.
Harvey Weinstein, justice has been a long time coming, but it's finally here.
On Triple J.
Today, many people are celebrating what they say has been a win for the global movement against sexual misconduct. So Harvey Weinstein, yeah, the disgraced Hollywood producer, has been found guilty of sex crimes, and he could go to jail for up to 25 years. Back in 2017, you may remember allegations against him led to the Me Too movement and hundreds of thousands of women all over the world, including here in Australia, were sharing their stories of harassment and abuse. Maybe you were one of them. Or those stories made you think differently about this stuff. Give me a ring, 1300 055 36. Here's Joe Lauder to bring us up to speed on the case.
For more than two decades, Harvey Weinstein was one of the most powerful men in Hollywood. The films made by his company Miramax included Good Will Hunting, Pulp Fiction, Silver Linings Playbook, Shakespeare in Love, Lord of the Rings, just to name a few. His movies were nominated more than 300 times for the Oscars, and in the acceptance speeches, he was thanked more than God.
Harvey Weinstein, who believed in us and made this movie.
Harvey and Bob Weinstein.
Harvey Weinstein.
Thank you, Harvey Weinstein.
Especially Harvey.
I want to thank Harvey and Bob Weinstein.
Thank Harvey Weinstein.
But there were always the rumors and the in-jokes.
Congratulations, you five ladies no longer have to pretend to be attracted to Harvey Weinstein.
Oh, please. I'm not afraid of anyone in show business. I turned down intercourse with Harvey Weinstein on no less than three occasions out of five.
Then in 2017, the New York Times published a major investigation cataloging allegations against the movie mogul, including sexual assault, harassment, rape, and cover-ups. These allegations became the spark that ignited the Me Too movement.
The new day is on the horizon!
As many as 80 women have come forward to accuse Weinstein of all kinds of awful behaviour and sexual abuse. A common theme was Weinstein inviting young women to private business meetings in hotel rooms or at his apartment, and then he would allegedly overpower them and assault them. Many of the women claimed that if they didn't go along or if they wanted to speak out, he would threaten to ruin their careers. Actresses Ashley Judd and Rose McGowan also say he assaulted them.
I went into a meeting at 10 a.m. and I was in the middle of my second film, so this is my boss. You just leave your body and everything happens so fast and so slow because this wasn't the plan. Here's the thing, people think hotel room is like what we see. You open a bedroom and there's a door. This is a presidential suite. It's the entire top floor of a massive hotel and there's about three offices in there.
I had a business appointment, which is as that's, you know, his pattern of sexual predation. That was how he rolled.
Gwyneth Paltrow's claimed that when she was 22, Weinstein put his hands on her in a hotel room and asked for a massage. And when she told her boyfriend at the time, Brad Pitt, he confronted Weinstein. There was also this secret police recording of him harassing a model.
I'm telling you right now.
What do we have to do here?
Nothing. I'm going to take a shower. You sit there and have a drink. Water.
I don't drink. Can I stay on the bar?
No, you must come here now.
No.
Please.
No, I don't want to.
I'm not doing anything with you.
In the end, Harvey Weinstein was put on trial for cases involving three women in New York. On one side, the prosecutors argued that Harvey Weinstein was a predator and used his influence in Hollywood to intimidate his victims into silence. But in his corner, Weinstein's lawyers argued that he was a victim of an unfair political movement and the women need to take responsibility for their actions.
She said, in that universe, women are not responsible for the parties they attend, the men they flirt with, the choices they make to further their own careers, the hotel invitations, the plane tickets they accept.
Weinstein's lawyer, Donna Ritano, argued that in these cases before the court, all the sex was consensual.
In my case, in these cases, these women had
relationships with Harvey that did not start the night that they walked into a hotel room. So there's a lot more in this story than I think meets the eye. And I think that the jurors will be surprised when they hear the evidence, especially given all the media coverage the case has had.
It took the jury 5 days to reach a verdict, and they found Mr. Weinstein guilty of rape and sexual assault, but acquitted him of three other charges, including the two most serious ones against him. One, that he's a sexual predator. He faces a possible sentence of between 5 and 29 years. Outside the court, some of Weinstein's accusers celebrated the decision.
It's no longer business as usual in the United States. This is the age of empowerment of women, and you cannot intimidate them anymore.
Weinstein was sent to jail to wait for the sentencing hearing in a couple of weeks, and the judge rejected his request to be sent home for medical reasons. But his attorney, Arthur Idala, told reporters they'll be appealing.
He didn't cry, he didn't break down, he wasn't sobbing. He was more in a state of disbelief. He just said, and he just kept repeating, but I'm innocent, but I'm innocent. How could this happen in America? But I'm innocent.
Hack, Triple J.
Joe Lauder reporting there, and I'd love to hear from you. What did you think of the Weinstein verdict and the Me Too movement overall? Did it help you think differently about sexual misconduct? Text me 0439757555. Yeah, many people are declaring this such a win for the global movement against sexual misconduct, even though Weinstein is going to appeal. But how's that fight going here in Australia? So Dr. Bianca Philiborne is a criminology lecturer at the University of Melbourne. She's written a book called Me Too and the Politics of Social Change. Bianca, the Weinstein win is being seen as obviously a moment to celebrate, but it is just one person, right? What does this mean for the broader Me Too movement?
Yeah, look, I think it's less clear what it means for the broader movement. Of course, we can see it as a positive thing that this incredibly powerful man who was perpetrating sexual violence for decades with impunity is being held to account. That's absolutely a win. But what I think is concerning is that this overemphasis on the outcome of the Weinstein trial runs the risk of framing Me Too and framing sexual violence as being about the actions of, you know, one deviant man. And now that we've dealt with him, the problem's solved. When, of course, we know that this is actually a much broader systemic issue that is really going to require significant long-term effort to change. And I think that need for longer-term change runs the risk of being lost by emphasising the Weinstein case.
Bianca on the text line, Danny's texted, never publicly shared my story, but I was so extremely excited to hear of Weinstein's conviction. I've gone through the court and my predator barely got a slap on the wrist, much to the magistrate's demise. How is this situation going in Australia? Are we prosecuting people who are accused of sexual misconduct in the same way as in the US?
No, so in Australia and also in the US, we know that the vast majority of people who experience sexual violence don't report to the justice system in the first place. For those people that do report, the vast majority of their cases never make it through to the courts, and they don't result in a successful conviction or a guilty plea. We also know that for most survivors, going to court and particularly being cross-examined by the defence is an incredibly re-traumatising experience. So it's certainly not a justice system for survivors of sexual violence, and the vast majority will just never see their case have its day in court.
On the Triple J Hack Facebook page, Rachel commented, he took it like a man. That's a poor choice of words from his lawyer. Monica, you say, good outcome, but I'm sure he will appeal. And yep, his lawyer has already said that he is going to appeal. Dr. Bianca Philiborne, criminologist. This is a tricky thing to talk about, but it's a very significant part of the Weinstein case. And that's two of the people accusing him said that they had consensual sex with him. So how does this idea of consensual rape come into this case? Can you explain what that is?
Yeah, so I think there's this widespread assumption that if you've had consensual sex with someone in the past, that that somehow says something about your future sexual encounters with them. And in particular, I think there's this assumption that consent can be assumed because it's been given in the past. And that's not the case. Consent is very specific and it's ongoing. So someone can always withdraw their sexual consent at any given moment during during an encounter. However, I think there is this broader misperception that, you know, sexual consent can be implied from past sexual encounters. And certainly we see that being used as a tactic in sexual offences cases in the criminal justice system, where the defence will suggest that it was quite reasonable for the perpetrator or accused person to assume that they had consent because of what had happened in the past. And we do know that those types of cases where there has been a previous history of consensual sexual interaction much less likely to proceed through the system or to lead to a successful conviction.
Yeah, Bianca, before we let you go, someone's texted this and I want to hear your response to it. They say, why not just leave the room? Nobody forced these women to stay in that hotel room except themselves. And that's definitely what Weinstein's lawyer has been kind of purporting all along as well. What do you say to that kind of sentiment?
Yeah, I mean, it completely, I guess, misunderstands the reality of sexual violence for a lot of survivors, where even if there's not physical violence or coercion, there is, I guess, implicit fear of the perpetrator. We know that it's incredibly common for survivors to freeze in the moment. I think it's also very easy to say in hindsight or when you're not immediately in that situation, well, I would just leave. But that's actually not how victims commonly respond.
Yeah, all right. Dr. Bianca Philiborn from the University of Melbourne, thanks for your insights there on the Triple J Hack Facebook page. Nick says, to the courageous women who held this animal to account, I say well done. And Michael, you say this is a win for everyone involved. This is Hack on Triple J. My name's Avani Dias, and soon we're going to talk about neo-Nazis. They're one of our most serious security threats now. First, though, a big issue we've been covering over the last year or so is the proposed oil drilling in the Great Australian Bight. So many Hack listeners and readers have been asking us to look at the issue, and I've got a massive update for you.
Hack. And that risk is a catastrophic oil spill that could leak thousands of barrels of oil per day for literally hundreds of days.
Triple J.
Yeah, imagine if there was an oil spill all the way from Western Australia across Victoria and Tassie, then up the New South Wales coast. That was the worst case scenario if oil drilling in the Bight went wrong. News broke today, though, that the Norwegian company behind that plan, Equinor, has abandoned the project. It said it doesn't make any commercial sense. So Heath Joski is a surfer. He lives on the Eyre Peninsula on the South Australian coast, and he works on a prawn trawler in the Great Australian Bight. Heath, you led protests against this oil drilling, and it took off all over the country. What were your concerns about this project?
Oh, they're extremely vast, but just really concerned for an exploration well to take place in the ocean that we've got down here. It's you know, it's got some of the wildest seas that you experience anywhere on the planet. It's so remote, so if anything ever went wrong, it would just be so hard to get infrastructure that we need here for a cleanup. It would be impossible to get it here in time before things had already gone too far and our coastline was covered in oil and it was heading east at a rate of knots, or potentially west as well. But so there's that, and there's just the incredible amount of fisheries that support so many people living on this coastline and throughout South Australia and the southern Australian coastline as a whole. It's that's a huge industry, along with the tourism industry. It's a lot to put at risk for for a project that maybe we shouldn't be going down that path anyway.
Yeah, heaps of people on the Triple J Hack Facebook page were celebrating this. Paula says this is fantastic news, happy days. How did you feel, Heath, when you heard the news today?
Oh, I was absolutely ecstatic. I was doing a bit of stonework this morning and my phone was ringing hot. I was worried that my wife had a crash or something, but got to the phone and I spoke to my friend Anna from Elliston, who's been actually sort of started this movement from the beginning, and she was just ecstatic. And no, I screamed down the phone at her, I won't do the same to you, I'll save you this for years. But
that'd be good radio.
I was literally just howling, just really, really ecstatic. Sorry.
Yeah, and I want to put this to you. David on our Facebook page has said this can't be considered a win until there's no option for any company to drill in the Bight. Yeah, the Equinor was the third company to abandon projects to drill in the Great Australian Bight. What needs to be done to make sure that it won't happen in the future, or is that even a possibility?
Yeah, I think it's definitely a possibility. There's been a bit of a push already for calling for World Heritage protection of the bite from 2020, which we're in, and you know, I think that's extremely relevant. It's such an extensive hotbed of marine life, and you know, just it's rare that an ocean can sustain so much incredible marine life in fisheries and just the wildlife out there.
Yeah, right. Heath Joske, thanks so much for your time. Pete on our Facebook page says, fantastic. Now stop Adani.
Pack. In suburbs around Australia, small cells meet regularly, salute Nazi flags, inspect weapons.
On Triple J.
If you think about what a terrorist looks like, chances are you think of a young Muslim boy radicalised by Islamic State taking up arms against Australia. Well, according to our top intelligence chief, that image is changing. Now neo-Nazis are becoming one of Australia's most serious security threats, according to the head of our spy agency, ASIO, and he barely ever speaks publicly. So here's Shalala Medora.
In Australia, the right-wing extremist threat is real and it is growing.
Mike Burgess is the head of Australia's spy agency, ASIO. As part of his role, he's providing a yearly report on where the biggest threats to Australia lie. He says Australia is not immune from a possible terror attack on home soil.
The number of terrorism leads we're investigating right now has doubled since this time last year.
He's got his sights firmly set on right-wing extremism.
In suburbs around Australia, small cells meet regularly, salute Nazi flags, inspect weapons, train in combat and share their hateful ideology.
Unfortunately, it seems like these groups have their sights on him too.
Sadly, these groups are more organised and security conscious than they were in previous years.
Security expert from the Lowy Institute, Sam Roggeveen, told Sky News that this is a pretty significant shift from ASIO.
This would not have been a topic of conversation even 5 years ago. Well, let's say 10 years ago, the focus would have been purely, I think, in a speech of this kind, on Islamic terrorism.
But Home Affairs Minister Peter Dutton played down the threat of right-wing extremism, saying Australian authorities would treat each threat as it emerges.
If somebody is going to cause harm to Australians, I just don't care whether they're on the far right, far left, somewhere in between, they will be dealt with. If the proliferation of information into the hands of right-wing lunatics or left-wing lunatics is leading to a threat in our country, then my responsibility is to make sure that our agencies deal with it.
The Minister for Home Affairs.
He repeated it in question time.
There is the capacity for these people, whether they're on the right wing, whether they're on the left wing, anywhere in between. It doesn't matter. It doesn't matter, Mr. Speaker. The fact is that we will deal with that threat.
Labor's Tim Watts said Australia needs to look at how the threat from neo-Nazis has played out abroad.
In the United States, since September 11, far-right terrorists have now killed more people on American soil than jihadists.
He said more funding needs to be put towards countering violent extremism. All up, the government has spent $53 million on countering violent extremism over 7 years. But only a fraction of that goes towards behaviour change programs for those at risk.
The government has invested less than $2 million a year in CVE intervention programs since 2013-14.
And even then, government money is most likely to target ethnically and religiously diverse communities.
It's unclear how much, if any, is targeting white supremacy. The government claims its social cohesion package responds to this commitment, but these programs are overwhelmingly aimed at multicultural communities, not those vulnerable to white nationalism.
Hack Triple J.
Shalala Medora with that story. Someone on the text line says extremism begets extremism. Our next guest works to stop young people from becoming far-right extremists. Her name's Priscilla Bryce. She works for a group called All Together Now. And they work with young people to stop them from turning into full-on radicalised white supremacists. And this is the only program preventing far-right extremism in New South Wales. Priscilla, firstly, what do you think about the ASIO boss's comments that neo-Nazis are now one of the country's most challenging security threats?
I think it's great that ASIO is speaking out about this issue, actually. We've been working on countering right-wing extremism since 2012. And we've been speaking a lot about those groups and the fact that work needs to be done to counter them for a really long time. So it's really great that the government is speaking out now about it as well.
Is it fair to say that they're often vulnerable, you know, things may not be going well for them in life and then they're feeling, I guess, a bit down and out and then are pushed to these extreme ways of thinking?
I think for some people, although there has been a trend in recent years that they look for people who are educated because they want to infiltrate government corporations, they want people with a little bit more societal power to become involved. So, yeah, it's not necessarily the down and outs that are joining these groups.
So tell us how you deal with people showing signs of far-right extremism.
We provide training for frontline workers, which includes youth workers, school counsellors and so on, people who work with young people every day, basically. And we help them understand what the far right believe in. And that includes, of course, a lot of racism. So we give an introductory, you know, understanding of racism down to the types of symbols, types of memes and I guess beliefs, the false beliefs effectively that they believe in, so that when frontline workers hear a young person talking like that or see a new tattoo, they know that that person is taking interest in the far right and can try and stop them from getting involved any further.
And what do they do then once they see those signs coming up in a young person?
Well, the second part of our training, it's a one-day training, is they know how to have a really constructive conversation with that person to try and get them to critically analyse their own beliefs and behaviour. So it's not about the frontline worker telling them what to do, but rather encouraging them to self-reflect a little bit.
And what's the importance of getting young people at that stage, I guess, before, you know, they may have been completely radicalised?
Yeah, it's really important that we get them quickly and early. It prevents them from going down that route. And once they've become embedded in far-right groups or in far-right beliefs, it's much more difficult to get them out. So early intervention is vital. And that's why we keep on saying that prevention is absolutely key in this.
This is Hack on Triple J. We're talking to Priscilla Bryce from All Together Now, which works on de-radicalising young people who are subscribing to far-right extremism. ASIO is talking about this now as quite a challenging threat for us here in Australia. So those, I guess, individuals who may be thinking in those early stages, is that going to be enough to stop this threat?
I guess for some it will be and for some it won't. But I think that's why you need to have that initial conversation so that you can try and challenge it early.
Priscilla, it is interesting your funding issues that you face. We covered this on Hack last year, but your funding was cut in 2014 under Tony Abbott's government. That was your federal funding. Now your state funding is due to run out in June. What would happen if it wasn't renewed? Would you guys just be done for?
The grant ran out, and so there wasn't any follow-up grant available for us to even apply for, which is really disappointing. And there still isn't a federal grant that we can apply for this type of work, which to me seems crazy because it's been such a successful program in New South Wales. So it is a little bit scary for our team because we think that what we're doing is really important work. But yeah, it's really a wait and see game. And this is like an invitation for the federal government to step up and help us do that.
Before we let you go, there may be people who are on their way to this kind of extremist thinking. What is your advice to them?
Although you think you might not belong in society right now, that's not true. There's a lot of things that you could do with your time, really productive things. Please seek other alternatives. There's plenty of things you can do, sports, arts, culture, but you do belong and there are some amazing things that you can get involved with if you just go searching. Don't believe the lies.
All right, Priscilla, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you.
Hack on Triple J.
That's Priscilla Bryce. She's from a group called All Together Now, and they work to counter far-right extremism. And we did ask the New South Wales government for a response on their funding, whether that'll be renewed, but they haven't gotten back to us yet. Someone's texted, the new left is responsible for the rise of the far right. Brody from Richmond says, in World War II, we detained Nazi sympathisers in Australia. Can't we just do that again? Well, let's speak to Professor Greg Barden from Deakin University. He's been researching radicalisation of all kinds for years, and he can tell us about that other side, how these extremist groups work. Greg, the ASIO boss says these right-wing extremist groups are fostering in small cells, they're saluting Nazi flags, inspecting weapons and so on. How do you monitor these tiny groups?
Well, that, of course, is one of the things that Mike Burgess was speaking about in his address yesterday, the need to be able to look at communications, including encrypted communications. But the larger piece is recognising, as Priscilla was telling us, that it's about wanting to belong. And so we need to look at social networks as well as these very powerful narratives. The narratives are really destructive, but it's this desire to join a group and be accepted that speaks to a legitimate human need that we can meet, as groups like Priscilla's All Together Now are doing, but also about a chance to detect where we've got problems.
But if these groups are so small, they're meeting in, you know, suburbs and so on, how do we actually identify where they're doing that and how they're kind of meeting, I guess?
Look, it might be three guys in a lounge room, but they're going to be connecting with hundreds of other people through chat forums, things like The Base, 4chan, 8chan. And there's a chance, it's difficult because of anonymity and encryption, but it is possible because of that social media networking to get a sense of where the problem is. And, you know, that's, of course, one of the lessons of Christchurch. The terrorist there, the Australian terrorist, had been posting, shitposting, as they say, at length for years. It was hard to figure out that he was somebody who was going to flip over and become a violent extremist and so effective in amongst the noise of all the other thousands of people doing the same thing. But that's one of the areas where we've got to do more work.
Yeah, so is the government doing enough here to actually find these people and do something about their behaviour?
Look, they're certainly working very hard on it, and I'm encouraged that the Director General of ASIO pinpoints this as being one of his priorities. The very first thing we heard from him was he appointed a little over 3 months ago. Back in October, he said that ASIO works very hard to prioritise finite resources. So the fact he's talking about right-wing extremism in his annual report suggests it's a really high priority for him and for his organisation, and that they are putting resources to it. But we need to understand this is not something that is just met with an intelligence agency response or a police response. We need more groups like All Together Now working in the prevention space and working particularly with vulnerable young people who have real human needs to belong and to be accepted and to find meaning. And if all we do is track them down and arrest them, look, that's really important to stop them doing harm, but it's not the only thing we need to be doing.
Before we let you go, Greg, one thing the ASIO boss has said is that there could be a possibility of an attack from a far-right group. What level is that threat at?
Well, he said that the biggest immediate concern remains groups like Al-Qaeda and Islamic States. That's where the big numbers are. But they are worried about a far-right group attacking. He said it's likely to be low-tech, low-impact, a knife or a truck. But having just said that, you know, a truck was used on Bastille Day in Nice to kill over 80 people, just one person driving a truck. So or that we don't have the problem of assault rifles being readily available as they were in New Zealand or as they are in America. So in a sense, we've got a bit of a buffer here. We're not going to see that as so likely, but it's still possible. I mean, whenever there's a large counter-narcotics bust, they often find assault rifles. So those weapons could be picked up by some people who go into right-wing extremism. But just using a knife or a car is pretty horrible. And that's the that sort of lone actor attack scenario that has everyone working in this space up at night sort of worrying about what they don't know.
Yeah. All right. Professor Greg Barden from Deakin University, thanks for your time. So many texts on this. Someone says, my ex-partner was a white nationalist. He was involved in extremist websites and groups, and it was frightening how organised they were. ASIO interviewed him during our relationship. That's so full on. And someone else says, just look at what's happened in London. Behaviour change doesn't work. Well, hopefully this renewed focus by ASIO does mean that there is more monitoring in this space. So many texts that came through on those stories. Dennis in Shell Harbour said, why are the police not arresting fascist groups? If there were armed communist groups training, they'd be arrested. Someone else says, it's the first I've heard of far-right extremism being a problem. I just wonder if it's the big man trying to polarise us all against each other. Well, ASIO is our top spy agency and they have said it's one of our biggest threats now. We also got heaps of texts on oil drilling in the Great Australian Bight. Someone says, imagine if something as bad as the BP Deepwater Horizon oil spill in 2010 happened to the Great Australian Bight, it'd be disastrous. Yeah, that's what scientists have told us. So a lot of wins there for environmentalists who were concerned about that. That's all we've got time for on this podcast. I'll catch you later.